And welcome back to the Sundance Reel. It's 9:36. I'm Leslie Thatcher, along with my co-host today, Katie Eldridge. Also in the studio with us now, I have the director of the film Life Itself, Steve James, and Chaz Ebert, the wife of Roger Ebert. Good morning, and what a pleasure to have both of you here. Thank you.
Good morning. We're really pleased to be here this morning. Absolutely. It's a beautiful, sunny day. We're just happy to be here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let me just start with you, Chaz. I mean, how has this been for you? I mean, it's great to have the film, but it's also really very sad for you, too.
Of course, it's bittersweet. The thing that would make it perfect would be if Roger had been sitting in the audience last night with us to see the film. But Steve, you know, he trusted Steve James as a filmmaker, and Steve did a fine job. So I have to thank him for that.
Well, and Steve, welcome back. I mean, you, and I think you briefly mentioned it yesterday, 20 years ago, you were here with your documentary Hoop Dreams, which actually got a retrospective as part of it. So you've actually got two films at Sundance this year. Maybe you could just start off. I mean, Hoop Dreams, I think, for a lot of documentary filmmakers, was the one film that really kind of broke the boundaries of how documentary film can be made. And it's like a real-life situation that can be told in sort of a narrative form. I mean, can you kind of talk to us just for a minute about how documentary film has changed since Hoop Dreams?
Well, I don't want Hoop Dreams to take all the credit for that. I mean, there was a lot of really great films being made around that time, and I think Hoop Dreams was one of them that did what you said. And I think part of it is that I think we tended to perceive documentaries as film medicine for too long, meaning it's good for you. You should watch them and learn things, but not necessarily something you want to do. And I think Hoop Dreams, along with some other films, Roger and Me, Paris is Burning, I mean, a lot of really interesting films from that time period, tried to tell stories and tell stories, nonfiction stories. And it's just, I think what's happened in documentary since then, I think we are truly living in a golden age of documentary filmmaking right now.
The film was fascinating watching it. I mean, I remember growing up watching, you know, Roger on television, but to really see his life, he was a brilliant man for one thing. And
yes,
he was a newspaper man at heart. And talk to me just a little bit about that scene, because I thought that was phenomenal for a 19, 20-year-old kid to notice about the ad and the article.
Yes, yeah. In the film, Roger Simon tells this great story, who was a student journalist back at that time, about after Kennedy was assassinated, Roger, who was the editor of the Daily Illini college paper, the printing presses are starting to roll, and he pulls off the sheet, as an editor does, to check it out, to make sure everything's right. And he notices that next to the article saying Kennedy's been assassinated just happened to be a Thanksgiving ad with a turkey but a gun pointed, and it, because of the placement of the ad, it ended up being a gun pointed at Kennedy's head. And Roger just said, "Stop the presses," like they say in movies. And as Roger Simon says, he says, you don't stop the presses in real life. But he did stop the presses. He said, we're not going to do this. And this is a young guy telling men that they're not going to do this. And they listened.
So to talk a little bit about, I mean, because it was, again, a smart man that was writing news stories and sports stories. Now he gets to, like, sit back and watch movies. Like how many? Like 10,000 movies, I think, over the career of his lifetime?
Well, more than that, I'm sure.
Yeah, he estimated it at 10,000. Who knows how many there he really watched. But he actually started a newspaper when he was 8 years old in his neighborhood. And we have copies of the newspaper that he started when he was 8. So he was always a precocious kid. And he always had a social conscience. One of the things that I did not know that I learned in the movie was what he wrote about when the four girls in Birmingham, Alabama, were killed after the bombing. That just, it's so
amazing.
Touching. It's amazing that someone that young had the presence of mind and was brilliant enough to say what he said about the blood being on the hands and not new blood, but old blood.
And on all of our hands.
And on all of our hands, yeah. Yes. He was an extraordinary man. I would say that, and I would tell him that, and he would say, No, I'm just a man. I'm just an ordinary man. I said, no, you're extraordinary. And now the whole world can see it.
Now, Steve, you started filming the film just, what, about 5 months before he died?
4 months.
4 months before he died. And so we get to see him in really, I mean, after multiple surgeries for, I think what originally it was bone cancer, jaw cancer.
It started as salivary cancer. It came back as a thyroid cancer, and then it recurred as a salivary cancer again.
So he basically had part of his face surgically removed.
It's sort of a misnomer when people say that nothing was really removed. He had surgery, and when they undid the surgery, there was a little less of it. Nothing was really removed, but people say it, the part of his jaw removed. It really wasn't, but I don't quibble with it because
his
appearance was altered. Yes.
So what he couldn't do though was swallow anymore, and then we see some of those scenes in there where suction became really a part of his life, where a vacuum tube basically goes down his windpipe to clean that out because he was unable to do that on his own.
Yes, and that's something that he allowed Steve to film. I had never ever allowed anyone to film that before. And Roger insisted on it because it was such a fact of his life. He was just such a stand-up guy. He told Steve to film it, and he made sure that they did it on a day when I wasn't there. So
and he sent me this great email. It's in the movie. He sends this great email after that day because I'm filming it, and it's tough to film. I actually was shooting that myself. I was like, oh my God! And I was actually so relieved when I got home and there was an email from him. Titled Great Stuff, We Got Something Today Nobody Sees, Suction.
And I guess that's what I thought was just so wonderful about the film, was because Roger, like any film, it was like, you know what, warts and all.
Warts and all, yes.
How did the process change once he had passed and you were already going on the project? How did that play into your approach as you move forward?
Well, I mean, the idea...
Changed it completely.
Yeah, I mean, the idea going in was we were going to document Roger and Chaz's life in the present and really to see how vibrant and active he remained. And then springboard off of that to the past and then do interviews with key people in his life professionally and personally. And it's still that film. It's just that no one expected when we started that he would be gone in 4 months. I think Chaz really sort of – she made it clear to me when we were just getting this started. She said, we need to start this now. I think she had a kind of sense that time was of the essence.
Whose idea was the film?
Well, the idea to do the film actually was Steve Zellian, the screenwriter, who's a huge documentary fan. He read Roger's memoir and loved it. And then he and his business partner, Garrett Bash, who became a producer on the film, first approached you guys about would you be interested in the possibility of it being optioned for a documentary. And then you were... agreeable, right?
Or no, I don't
how,
think.
How,
I don't
how
think,
did it happen? Or
no,
did they approach me before they ever approached
I
you?
Think they,
we should know this.
I think one of the reasons that we said yes is I think you were already attached to the project by the time
they even asked
us.
Okay.
I think I don't remember.
Was the first time you saw the film last night?
I saw an earlier version. It was the first time I saw the full finished. Version of the film, yes, was last night.
And what was that like?
It was very emotional. It was, I did enjoy seeing my husband up there on the screen, and there were some times that I noticed there were times when I laughed when other people didn't laugh, but it was because I knew what was happening between me and Roger when we were communicating with each other, and we actually had developed almost it was almost like mental telepathy when we would communicate with each other. Sometimes people would be there with us, and they would say, how did you know that he said this or you said that? Because we didn't hear you say anything, and we didn't see you signal each other. And I said, I don't know. I think we just know now. So I saw some things on the screen and I knew what was happening, and I laughed, and other people weren't laughing. But
and our just last couple of minutes, I can't let you go without talking a little bit about Siskel and Ebert. And I guess, I mean, we don't know what goes on behind, you know, that once the cameras are off. So I think it was interesting to learn about the rivalry and the competition and really a dislike, I think, for one another. But after hearing you and his wife, Roger's, Gene's wife, talk, it sounds like they kind of came to some kind of reconciliation. Huh?
Oh, they were together for almost 24 years. The first 5 years, they really did not speak to each other. They were, back then, you know, newspaper men were so competitive. One was the young writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. The other was the young writer for the Chicago Tribune. They were making their names in journalism, and they did not want to work together. Well, Roger didn't want to work with Gene. Roger said, I'm a one-stop shop, and he didn't need to work with this other guy. And so for the first 5 years, they really didn't like each other that much, and that competitiveness that you saw on TV was real. That's why the show lasted for so long.
That's why it was so good.
Over the years, though, of course, they developed this really friendship and a brotherly relationship. By the end, they loved each other.
And I think that brotherly thing, which I can relate to because I have an older brother that I think me and we're like, he was like my Siskel. it's never a simple progression from vitriol, animosity to pure love. Mm-hmm. Each of the producers that we talked to on the show who spanned different phases of this 20 years, they each felt like they witnessed the change. Okay? They all felt like, oh, I saw the change mm-hmm. happen. And so that tells you that this was a very rich and complicated relationship from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, Roger would like me to remind that only one, though, had a Pulitzer.
Thank you.
Again, the film is Life Itself, a retrospective of Roger Ebert. And as we heard from John Cooper, the director of the Sundance Film Festival, the easiest program ever to program. So congratulations on that.
There are several more screenings, one today at 1 o'clock at Redstone Cinema. And then we still have Sundance Resort, Temple Theater, and the Tower Theater in Salt Lake. So lots of opportunities to see it.
Chaz, right, and
thank
Steve,
you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.